So, before we get going, let's just say this. I met your brother. What a charming, lovely, delightful man he is. I mean, what immediately struck me is that he was, you know, clever, intelligent, witty. He just had everything, didn't he? Families can be so brutal.
Well, two things. Firstly, yes, I mean, sometimes the gifts are unevenly distributed in families. And secondly, that doesn't sound anything like my brother. I think you've been taken in. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, laid down lovers, anyone who's listening, to episode 276 of the Midfaith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page. There's Joe Davis.
Hello! And your brother has a new laid down lover. I'm still not really sure how to use that phrase.
That doesn't sound right at all.
Doesn't sound right, does it? I know. I'm not sure of any context where you can use that, really.
No, laid down. Well, if you're wondering, by the way, if you've just come in here and you're now going, sort of what is happening here, this is a reference to a song that we talked about last week, which has the repeated refrain, sort of one more laid down lover, isn't it?
Yes, something like that. Yes, you have one more laid down lover. It's a worship song, supposedly.
Do you think it's missing a letter? Do you think it means slayed down love? And it's like, you know, like the slaying arm that you used to have.
Oh,
you know, people got slain in the spirit.
Wouldn't be spelt right then, would it?
You know, I just thought, you know, they could have been slayed and fallen over.
Could be.
Anyway, church notices.
Well, church notices are simply that Dave Steele and I are doing a Staying Defiantly event. As at least I say we're doing it. I mean, we might possibly not be doing it. There's so little interest. But if you're a church leader and you're struggling with your morphing theology and holding a church together, this could be the conversation for you. 2 days in Brighton, chatting to Dave, who's sort of been there and done it, and myself, who hasn't been there but is very interested in this sort of thing. So if that is something that is of interest to you, then do check out our Facebook page or possibly even the show notes for a link this week. And we'd love to see you there in Brighton on the 18th and 19th of April. And if you don't come, we'll either be sat in a room on our own or we'll cancel it. I don't know.
It's sounding a trifle desperate now.
Do you know what it is, isn't it? And no one wants someone who's desperate.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think you should plead. And, you know, also the audio quality is terrible if you're on your knees. Anyway, I've got a church notice about next week's service.
Okay, good.
By the way, or podcast, as it's currently known, which is there won't be one. It will be cancelled.
for bad behaviour.
Yeah, cancelled for injuries caused by being a laid down lover. I'm going on holiday.
Good.
And
where are you going?
I'm going to St Ives in Cornwall.
Lovely.
Yes. No, I'm sure it'd be lovely. It's just, and if anyone, any listeners were out there, want to get a drink, get in touch, that'd be nice. No, what happened was I didn't really want to do a lot of driving because, you know what, I'm a bit like driving, don't like it much. And last year I went up to Scotland. I feel I'd done my holiday driving, and I expressed this to my wife, who then discovered you could get quite cheap train tickets down to Cornwall at this time of year. So we're going on the train. The only issue there is we booked it all up before our little dog, Bill, started developing quite sort of anxiety issues and territorial marking issues and things like that. And so
that sounds terrible.
Quite what he's going to be like on a train journey, I don't know.
Oh, bless him. I love Bill.
He'd probably be fine. He'd probably be fine.
That's interesting. Well, have a great time, of course.
Thank
and
you.
Come back and tell us all about it.
You love Cornwall, don't you?
I do love Cornwall. It's just a wonderful, wonderful place. Now, how are you?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. What have I been doing? Oh, listen, you know, the big hot ticket in current entertainment is, you know, the Taylor Swift tour, I suppose.
The Eras tour,
well,
yes.
You'd think it was the Taylor Swift tour, but actually what it truly ought to have been is the Abingdon and District Model Railway Association annual exhibition, which I went to last week.
Can you imagine how annoyed she'd be when she finds out she's missed that?
I know. Well, you know, people would have chosen that over her anyway. But, you know, I went there last week. It's very good. So I went to a model railway exhibition. That was very nice.
Okay, lovely. Yeah, you can't beat a model railway. Yeah,
you can't. You cannot. Yes, and as I said, I'm going on holiday. The train option seemed such a good idea at the time. We'll keep you informed on that. Mm. Thankful for food. Obviously thankful for food. The new and eagerly awaited section of the show. I blame you actually for this.
Oh.
Because I am thankful this week for fish pie.
Oh, and I know what you're going to say. Charlie Biggins.
Charlie Biggins.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. It's my second favourite to the chicken korma. Yeah.
But they're quite pricey, aren't they? This is the problem. But the ones for two are okay. I mean, compared to going out for a meal, obviously it's nothing. But a little treat we had last week.
Delicious.
But a fish pie generally, a really well-made fish pie.
A fish pie is good. Yeah, it is.
Excellent. So that's this week's
fish pie
for food.
It's beautiful.
What an exciting segment that continues to be.
It is, and eagerly anticipated. I like it. It's very tedious for the listeners, though.
Yep. So that's me and your good self. How are you?
Good. So I went to the theatre and I saw Woman in Black. That's very scary. Then, it genuinely was quite frightening. And there was one point where the woman sat in front of us, slightly to the right, who must have, I assume, seen the show before, because we noticed her sliding down in her seat and sitting on the floor where she clearly couldn't see anything for a moment. And then she resurfaced to the chair after the screams had died down. Yeah, it is. It's one of those jumpy kind of things.
It is very jumpy. It's very jumpy. Yes, jumpy. It is. Yeah.
And, I had a birthday. I every day I wait for a card from a certain friend, but it doesn't matter. I live in hope that I may get one.
Okay, but the problem was the gift of birthday remembering and celebrating was given to my brother and not to me.
He's a lovely fella, isn't he? Isn't he super?
I just didn't get that. Sorry.
The reason I'm telling you this, other than the vain attempt to make you feel guilty, is because we had an incredible cheese fest. So I am thankful for, you know, so much cheese bought by our lovely friend Ali, who works at Great Ormond Street, as you know, and a new cheese shop has evidently landed nearby, and it's incredible. So yeah, we had a lovely cheese board on the evening. We went out for a Thai lunch on the Saturday, which is lovely, and that's great. And we enjoyed the sunshine and a walk, and it looks like spring is coming. Having had another couple of wet days this week, there is clearly evidence that spring is on the way. So very grateful for that. And ticking over, got some very challenging funeral to do tomorrow. Maybe I'll talk about that sometime in the future. But yeah, no, all is well.
Good. Well, shall we get on? We've got a feedback show today.
Yes.
Really, lots of stuff. Particularly, people seem to really respond to the "What is the point of Joe" episode. Oh, listen, I must send you a screenshot, because I occasionally go and sort of check out where we are on the Apple podcast charts, where each episode is in the Apple charts, the podcast charts. I don't do it too much because I don't want to be obsessed with this sort of thing. And it's amazing how with only 17 listeners, you can get quite high up anyway. But it really made me laugh, because we tend to be surrounded by American podcasts, to be honest,
right.
By pastors, you know, with funny names and bright teeth, you know, and they're all talking about very worthy Christian things. So here we are, the podcast surrounding us sort of last week were things like getting specific. What do I desire? No more excuses. And there was one called "Can Christians watch occult and horror content?" and myriad miracles. And then in the middle is us with "What is the point of Joe?"
That's beautiful.
It made me laugh.
That is good. Well, listen, let's get on with some feedback, and let's start with one really important one. Let's just put it out there. You remember we were talking about silly and inappropriate place names in the UK?
Us? Doesn't sound like something.
I know, it's shocking, isn't it? But yeah. Emily wrote in, said, speaking of silly place names, she used to live near Willy. So there you are, beat that.
Of course she did.
Okay, moving on. Sue was shocked at my age of being 59. She says, 59 is nothing. So sadly, in this day, you won't have the thrill of being 60 and getting a state pension and bus pass. Best presents ever for me, and worth the anticipation after being 59. Yeah, that does sound good, actually. And she says, and your purpose, of course, is to make us laugh. And now this is the brackets bit. And hula hoop while listening, if truth be told. So, Sue, hula hoops while she's listening to the podcast. That's what I'm taking from that.
Yeah. Or Sula hoops, as it might be. Thank you very much.
Yes, very good. That's fascinating. If you do odd things while listening to the podcast, please do write in to Joe at midfaithcrisis.org. We'd love to know what you get up to. Anyway.
Well, hold on. We'd like to know some of what you get up to. If you do really odd things, I don't want to know, I'll be honest.
I kind of do. Anyway,
okay.
Anyway, she moves on. So the purpose is making love and open our minds to the utter futility of trying to box in the God of infinite love. She says, I'm 74 and have just started on the perilous heart-thumping road to deconstruction in the last 6 months, long after Steve Chalk made me a follower of Jesus 36 years ago. He has so much to answer for, that bloke, doesn't he?
He does.
Yes, he does. Anyway, better late than never, being free in Jesus, she says. So there you go. Sue, you're so welcome and keep hula hooping. Don't stop now. And she says, P.S. Re-crystals, it brought to mind that I don't want a heaven or God where streets, buildings, etc. are made of precious stones and metals. Coldly brilliant and harsh. Those biblical descriptions turn me off. I want blue sky, sunshine and shade. And just to throw it out there, I don't think I believe in hell anymore. And then she says, P.P.S. My Waitrose still has the chicken cormas temporarily unavailable. So the Dealey effect goes on. They'll be running out of fish pie soon as well.
Fish pie now, yeah. Lovely. Thank you so much. So I think there's a few things there. You're never too old to deconstruct, quite clearly.
No, exactly.
So it's sort of the mid-faith crisis is not necessarily aligned to midlife, I suppose.
Absolutely.
It can happen at any point.
Yeah.
Heaven, yeah, I think the thing to remember is the biblical descriptions are set in a context where that's the sort of best world they can imagine.
Yeah,
you know, they're in a very sort of real earthy world where there's lots of sort of suffering and things that aren't nice. So their best world they can imagine is one of gemstones and bright light and everything pure and clean. So, you know, I that might be a depiction of heaven. Anyway, we're all going to the new earth, as we know. So, good, we'll have a pub. That's what I like to think.
It's good. It is what you make of it, isn't it, heaven?
It is a bit, yeah. But it's not necessarily that. I mean, I suppose it is wishful thinking, but sometimes wishful thinking is not wrong. It's things you wish for. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, and also I think it's about the physicality of life being quite good. That's why I like the whole new world theology.
Yeah,
it's a sanctification of our world, you know, as it is. It's the fulfillment, you know, just as the point, what's the point of Joe? The point of Joe is to grow into the person God created. Same is true of creation, you know, that it is yearning.
I think I agree. And also that first law of physics, you know, about, you know, it's something to do with energy can't be created, only transferred. I mean, you know, this universe is going somewhere. It doesn't just go. It doesn't just disappear. There's something new going on, being built. Anyway, I like that, all that stuff. You know.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyway. Okay, so, and thank you, Sue. And Jane says, okay, now this is interesting. She says, okay, I think I get the message. First, from Brian Draper's wonderful Lent reflection last week, the author Cindy Lee suggests prayerful encounter with God, a drawing near, can help us to see things, including ourselves, differently from God's perspective. And the quote is, on the days I can no longer see myself clearly, I enter into the space I share with God and I ask, God, when you first imagined me, who did you see? What a wonderful question. Why not ask it now? Then yesterday, she says, I listened to Bill Fay's album, Life is People, and the song Be at Peace with Yourself well worth a listen. Then today, she says, your podcast about discovering our life's purpose. Yes, I think I get the message. Be yourself. Be the person God imagined you to be. Think it might take a lifetime to find out, though. Many thanks for the thought-provoking podcast. And what I loved about that is it reminded me of times in my own sort of spiritual journey where you feel like the divine's got a loud hailer on you and there's a message coming through loud and clear and you're getting it from all kinds of different sources and you can't ignore it. And I always think you should pay attention to those kind of things, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. You know, we talked about how God speaks to you or doesn't speak to you or whatever, but I do think those kinds of coincidences, if you like, or echoed messages are really important.
Mm,
yeah. I was thinking, you know, often on the podcast, after I've spoken to you, I have regrets.
Yes.
But leaving those aside, I also feel sorry for the things I didn't say. No, I remember, you know, when after I regret because I think, always. Oh, I should have said this.
Yes.
You know, and there was a great story that I thought that I put on my blog, but I wanted to share. And it's from the Tales of the Hasidim by our old friend, Martin Buber.
Yes. It's little Marty Boobley. Yeah.
Little Marty Boober and the I and Thou Christmas album.
Yes.
So Martin Buber was a German Jewish theologian, but also a philosopher. And he collected Tales of the Hasidim. And in one of the tales concerns a rabbi called Rabbi Zusia. And Rabbi Zusia dies. This is a sort of paraphrase of the story. He dies and he's on his way to heaven. He's in the queue to meet God, you know, and he's really worried because he thinks God is going to ask him, why were you not like Moses? Why were you not more like Moses? Why were you not more like Ezekiel or Elijah? Why were you not more like these great heroes of faith? Why were you not more like David?
Mm.
And when he finally gets to the front of the queue, God just leans in very close and says quietly, I have one question. Why were you not more like Rabbi Zusia? And that's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah,
I
mean,
it's such a great story.
Yeah,
because the question we've got to ask is, why are we not more like the best of ourselves? The person that God imagined in that quote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's really good. And then Christina wrote in. Wonderful email. She says, thank you for your continued honesty in the MFC podcast. You bring realism and authenticity to my week with great humour. I love it. She said, on your recent feature about what our ideal church would be like, a listener gave reference to the green crockery found in many of our churches. She said, I did some research into this and it is in fact called beryl. This is incredible. In case your resident church history buff, that's you by the way, isn't able to help, it is in fact an iconic tableware design first used in the 1940s. Wartime restrictions on colours led to its pale colour, and it was felt that the unique bands created an appealing and economic tableware made by Wood and Sons. Beryl gets a name check in the Bible in Exodus, Ezekiel and Revelation.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about church crockery. That's not why I'm emailing. It's not, but that is fascinating.
That is important, and I think in a way it's time to retire the podcast because haven't we achieved everything now? We've discovered what that crockery is now called.
Yeah. Next, if you've got any beryl in your church, let us know, and also exclaim beryl every time you see it, please.
And beryl is, of course, one of the substances that heaven is made out of in Revelation. It's a gem, isn't it, beryl?
Is it? Have you just you've just invented that? That's not true.
No, it's not. It's a gem. You mean
gold, silver,
it's
and
a gemstone.
Beryl?
Yeah, indeed. What a girl band they were.
You're too confused.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true.
The Sugar Babes. Anyway. Okay. Anyway, she says, back to Christina, please. Pull yourself together. What is the point of Joe? She said, I love the question you asked about whether God provides meaning to our lives or whether that's our job. All those things Nick said about you are true. You do bring joy to situations and you have an attractive personality. You are an evangelist. The only thing that has changed is the landscape. And she says, please carry on being you. Thanks, Christina. She says, I've been reflecting this month as it's 40 years since I was baptized. I was given a picture or prophecy. Yes, it was back in the 80s, of me being like a precious stone. I made a list of all the things I'm involved in and who I am. Some of these things bring me joy, wife, mother, friend. Others I feel obliged to do. They sap my joy a bit. And finally, the things that inspire me, the stuff that pushes and stretches me and provides me with faith-stretching opportunities. I realised my life is actually multifaceted, like a precious stone. And she says, I'll be, I love this, I'll close by sharing something which I hope will make you laugh. A year or two ago, you did a feature about names, and I've been meaning to share this with you ever since. When I order stuff online, I use my abbreviated name, Chris, instead of Christina. I was ordering something from Mountain Warehouse, says other outlets are available, in the usual way, autofill had populated the boxes with my details. I thought I had deleted the letters Tina from my first name, but it wasn't until I got to the final stage at checkout that I realised I'd left a T in by mistake. I tried to correct it, but the system wouldn't let me, so I had to leave it in. After the transaction was processed, the following message flashed up on my screen. Christ, you've just won 40% off your next order. It made me hoot. She says, loads of love, a bewildered and menopausal minister's wife. Well, you are much more than that, Christina. Thank you so much.
You are. There are many ways to be Christ-like, and one of them is to get 40% off your next order.
And I don't think we think about that enough. So.
No, we don't. We don't.
Absolutely brilliant.
One of the signs of blessedness. What a lovely story.
It is, and you certainly are precious, so thank you. I first met Christina at Spurgeon's in 1994. So there you go. I don't think I've seen her much since then. So thanks for writing in, Christina. It was lovely, and best wishes to Matt. Anyway, Vicky says, couple of thoughts on purpose. She says, minor point, think some people's personalities mean that it is a much bigger issue for them than others. I tend to agonise about changing the world, leaving a legacy, having an impact, etc. But my husband doesn't seem fussed and is happy to live in the moment. That's a good point. And then she says, the main point, doing versus being. On your pod, you were talking about purpose as action-related, stuff you do, up until the end when Nick talked about being fully yourself. I think it's useful to dig into this a bit more. The doing versus being. Have you been doing Brian Draper's Lent emails? Yes, he was highlighting the temptations of Jesus and how they relate to us on day 5. And he quoted Nuon. And it goes like this. As I've said in previous years, Henri Nuon explains how Jesus in his temptations faced 3 classic lies of humanity, which veil our true identity. I.e., I am what I do or achieve, which is the turn stones to bread. I am what others say about me, throw yourself from the temple and the angels will catch you. And I am what I have, worship me and I will give you all the kingdoms of this world. I think sometimes when we are thinking about purpose, we can get sucked into the first 2 of these temptations. We want to achieve for God, but it can't be all about achievement, can it? Otherwise, where does that leave our disabled and learning disabled friends who can't achieve much in the way that term is traditionally understood, but can be fully themselves in God? So, I completely agree with that first one about it being the minor point, as Vicky said, about it being a personality thing. I think that is typified in my own relationship with Rachel, who doesn't spend a lot of time thinking about the deep purpose of her life and, you know, setting goals and doing all that sort of thing. She just tends to take the moment as it is and live very well, which is a little bit annoying for me.
Yes, I think that is a really good point. I mean, at work, where I work some of the time, I'm there a lot of the time, I work some of the time when I'm there, we do strengths finders. I don't know if you've done strengths finders.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
You know, that when you have strengths finders, when you're an achiever, what you leave in the world, what you do, what you tick off, matters immensely to you, and you encounter these people who are desperate to tick their way through the to-do list. You know, and my wife Claire, she's very, she's quite like that. Although the goals she tends to set tends to be goals for me, I've noticed.
I look a bit like a to-do list.
Yes, yeah, I want things like generally get better. Anyway, I think it is. It will come down to personalities to some extent, but I think all of us tend to do this over-identification. Of what we do with who we are. I wrote about this in Dark Night of the Shed, which is that idea that kind of you meet people at a party and they say, what do you do? And you go, well, I am a writer, or I am a celibate, or I am a doctor, or I am, you reply with what you are, what you think you are.
Yeah.
You know, the correct answer to the question of what do you do would be to say, well, what do I do when? You know. Some of the time I write, some of the time I podcast, some of the time I lie on the sofa eating Doritos. There's, you know, there's, I'm a complex human being. I'm
proud of all of those.
Indeed. But we do. We sort of pigeonhole ourselves into this thing. Having said that, I wouldn't want to take away from the embodiment aspect, because otherwise it can get very passive and we can go back into that old evangelical thing about, well, it doesn't matter what I do. I don't have to do anything because I'm so justified.
Yeah.
I can just hang around and wait for eternity.
Yeah.
So I would want to say it's not necessarily about achievement. It's not that achievement is bad. It's a question of what are you achieving and for whom? You know, what's the goal? I think we overvalue, in a way, the wrong achievements. Or I've been thinking about this quite a lot this week, because it seems to me we've sort of built in this kind of visible achievement in terms of our own social lives and our leisure time. You know, it's good to make things, but sometimes it seems to me that the whole point of making something or going somewhere is so that you can share it on Instagram,
right? Yeah,
you know, and tick it off as an achievement.
Yeah,
you know, that it's not enough just to have cooked a lovely meal or even to have arranged it nicely. You've got to take a picture of your cheese board or whatever it is you've done. I don't suppose you did this, but you know, you've got to do. People do it, don't they? People Instagram their meals, and I think I don't know. Why? You just bought that. Somebody's made it and given it to you. That's not an achievement that you've achieved. You're just saying, look at me, I'm having a lovely meal, you're not. So one of the things I'm doing at the moment with this whole emphasis on sort of focus is trying to sort of think about how do I produce things without having to share it with everybody?
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of responses to that. No, firstly, I quite enjoy pictures of food, just saying. I mean, so, you know, feel free to share pictures of food with me, particularly if it's cheese. I actually now regret not taking a photo of the cheese board on Saturday, if I'm honest, because I want to relive those moments. But also, I think you're right. There's also something, isn't there, just here, I think, which you're sort of hinting at, about just basic humility. It's such a winsome thing. You don't have to show off all the time. I mean, we've talked about this when we talked about social media before, and it's made me very reticent, in all honesty, to share anything anymore, because I worry that, you know, what are my motives for sharing this? And now it's sort of caused a bit of a crisis within me, you know. Am I showing off? Am I saying, oh, look at me? Am I in desperate need of validation by sharing a picture? You know, so I mean, the truth really, I don't put as much up on Facebook or anything anymore, slightly because I'm having a crisis about that. I hope it's not for wrong reason. You know, I love seeing people's pictures on Facebook, especially if they're pictures of their families and things and they haven't been in touch recently. I love that sort of thing. So that's what I tend to do. And also sunsets, as you know. But yeah, I agree. And I think there is sometimes good to create something beautiful just for the sake of doing something beautiful, not with any sense of, now I've got to take a photo of this and put it out. I agree with that. You know, to enjoy beauty for the sake of beauty.
Yeah. So I was reading this week about some monks, I think they're Buddhist monks, who build very intricate and beautiful patterns in the sand. And then they just brush it over when they're done. They've just done it. There's no need to, they don't take a photo of it and send it to Facebook. They just, the joy is in the making. Now, I don't want to give anyone a guilt trip, and I'm sorry if I've added to this about.
Yeah, you've added to my crisis. Thank you very much.
Your motives. I'm so sorry about that, Joe, but, you know, you are a work in progress. You know, no, I don't want to give anyone a crisis and have it to second guess their actions the whole time. I just want to sort of get away from this idea that a thing is only real if it's been shared.
Yes, you know, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
The joy is in the creation. God created and creates all the time stuff we can't see and we'll never see. You know, stuff that only recently we've been able to see through high-powered microphones. High-powered microphones. Through high-powered microscopes.
Yeah, sure.
yeah, as yeah. they're technically known. You know, so there's whole levels of creation that we can never see, like birds have the ability to see colours we will never see.
Yes, that's incredible, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
So God must have created all those, knowing that, you know, huge swathes of his creation will never appreciate it. He can't Instagram everything. And so the joy is in the creation. You know, obviously it's not wrong to share things. I really want to say that. But I do think that the making is what it means to be made in the part of what it means to be made in the image of God.
Yeah, I like it. Well, look, we're going to crack on because there's two more bits we want to do before we go home. Oh, no, we are home. Right, Gary says, thanks, guys. Hi from Texas again. Yeehaw. I really loved the conversation on purpose this week. It was in my 50s that decades of cognitive dissonance and wrestling with God really transformed into a more settled spirituality, one comfortable with uncertainty. He said, a couple of years ago, I was still really struggling with being angry with myself for all the time I wasted trying to stay in the evangelical story of certainty and control. He said, I especially beat myself up for raising my three kids, thought it was my responsibility as the man to lead them into the right and certain way that they should go. I wish I had just let them know about my doubts and questions I was really having. He says, my wife had a rough story of her life growing up, and when I married her 30 years ago, I got three mother-in-laws in the deal. He said, in brackets, obviously a long story. He said, my favourite mother-in-law, Grandmother Katie, as my children called her, lived out in the woods in a trailer. Her house was surrounded by wind chimes and crystals. She was a very spiritual person, open to many traditions and belief systems. I remember when she was in her 50s, I was in my 20s and 30s, we would sit on her porch late into the night, smoking little cigars and talking about theology. She wasn't antagonistic to my Christianity, but didn't like most Christians she had met. I really respected her, but there was a stupid smugness inside me that thought I was really right and she was a little California woo-woo. She died in her 50s. It is so bittersweet and strange now that I am at that age to see that I didn't avoid the mid-faith crisis and I am currently in about the same spot that she was then in her spiritual journey. Only looking back can I recognise the grace and magnanimity of that woman towards me as a young mansplainer. I wish I could talk to her now. One thing I can do is lean into my purpose of being me, which includes striving for that same kind of grace in my interactions with younger Christians on their own spiritual journeys. Seems to involve a lot of listening, smiling and nodding. He said, sorry, this is so long. When I turned 50, I had a full physical exam and ended up getting a pithectomy. That's brilliant. Thanks, Gary.
What a brilliant email. What a lovely email.
That is lovely and honest, isn't it? Thank you for that, Gary. Yeah.
And I mean, as it says in the Bible, regrets, I've had a few. But then again, too few to mention. This is the book of Frank, I think.
I believe so. Didn't make it into the normal canon.
we all have regrets.
Yeah.
Things we didn't do, things that we did do, I suppose, and I think they cling to us, don't they? That's the thing.
Yeah.
I can't really remember all the kind and nice things I said last week. I'm sure I did say some, but I can't. But
it's a chance. Yeah.
Yeah. There is that. Actually, as I said that, I had the awful possibility that I didn't actually say any of them. But anyway, no. You know, I can't remember those, but I can remember the times I put my foot in it, or the times I've, you know, said things that I shouldn't have said.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, the positive thing to do with that is what how Gary's doing it now, to nod and smile and listen to people and not to be the person you were, but to be changed by those memories. And then in that case, in that sense, the past will have done its job. It would have changed us in the present.
And I think the other thing is, certainly, because I've felt the same about, you know, some of the torture my kids went through at Sunday school, particularly my son. And you think, well, hey, I can still talk to them about that because mercifully we're all alive. And two, I just think, you know, when you are beating yourself up as a parent, as all parents do, love really does cover a multitude of sins, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I may have done many disastrous things to and for my children, but I do love them. And I think it's the love that, that carries through as a parent. So
it is.
Yeah, understandable, but yeah, and thank you for that, Gary, and thanks for being so honest about your experiences. I like the California woo-woo there. We've all been there.
Well, some of us.
Okay, look, we should land this. So let's just do one more from Harriet. And Harriet says, Dear Joe and Nick, I've been reflecting on your conversation about the meaning of life and your phrase, I am free in Christ. It led me on to thinking about the question of human instinct and feelings. I know that there is much Christian teaching that emphasizes that we cannot trust our human instincts. This concept that instincts are by nature to be treated with suspicion, as they have a tendency to lead us to sin. This is a belief that by and large is held by my church, although not preached in a heavy-handed way. Having spent most of my life until a few years ago in atheist environments, this has been a very alien approach to me, to human nature, and so one I have thought much about on encountering it. Whilst I have come to see the wisdom in this, after all, we can see where the worst of human instincts can take the world and ourselves on occasions, it's bothered me when complexities to this seem missing in church, that our calling as Christians is surely to keep trying to steep ourselves in and live out the righteousness and goodness of Christ, and that the more we do this, the more our minds, as Nick said, and our hearts will align with Jesus. Fleeting moments when our hearts are peacefully still or joyful or compassionate, and in that moment become a tiny reflection or shadow of God's heart. And in those times we are truly free in Christ, and so can put trust in our feelings and our instincts. So that was a lovely email about that sort of thing. And we have talked about this quite a bit before, I know, but it's just good to know that actually sometimes we can trust ourselves. And, you know, there is a tradition, there's a brand of Christianity that is very anti that, and that you can never be trusted. You're just sinful in nature and rest of it. And so I'm grateful to Harriet for just writing in with that.
Well, you know, I was writing this piece on wisdom last week.
Yes. How did that go?
Which I submitted. Well, I've submitted it. I don't know if it's any good, but, you know, we'll wait and see. But one of the things there, and reading up about it and thinking a lot about it, is the fact that a lot of wisdom is physical, it's embodied. It's in our experiences of life. It's in things we've seen and heard and sensed. Yeah. And so, of course, you have to trust that. The idea that wisdom is purely in your brain and purely sort of set of mystical beliefs and pushing us beyond the veil of this world into some cosmic oneness, you know, well, it actually, biblical wisdom, as in Proverbs and all that kind of stuff, it's a lot about just how you treat one another, how you empathize with the poor and the needy, how you deal in everyday situations, how you act as a shopkeeper. You know, it's very embodied, it's very earthy.
Yeah.
And this whole Greek-influenced Christian tradition of not trusting the body, of rather hating the body, is, I think, deeply unhelpful, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I will have more to say on that when we eventually do an episode on wisdomness.
Yes, which must be coming up, frankly, since the year is coming to an end on March 25th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this month. Well, yeah. I just wanted to say that that's what I like about, you know, revisiting discipleship and what that means, that it's not just a heavy-handed trying, but it's learning to embrace the mind of Christ and actually acting the way Christ would in situations, or if Christ was you.
Yes.
I love that idea. So you do sense that it's something you perhaps can get better at and trust your instincts perhaps more and more. Because if life in the kingdom is simply just doing the next good thing, then I guess if you keep doing that, you'll get practiced at it and become proficient at it and will instinctively know what that thing is. So you can trust
exactly.
it. Yeah. Mm. Good stuff. Anyway, we should probably wrap up now because we've talked for quite long enough.
We have. And so just a reminder, everyone, that there will be no podcasts next week. But the week after that, I think we'll be returning to our excitingly named Moderately Interesting Questions.
Yes.
And I'd like to do that one about praise. Is God a bit needy?
Yes.
Why does God always need praise? And your interpretation of that, which is, shouldn't I get more?
Exactly. I mean, I think you do deserve more, Nick, because especially when you've done all the work. I mean, when I've done all the work, why does God need all the praise? It's no win.
That is, do you know what? I pitched that as an idea to the magazine editor. I said, I could do an article on how come God gets all the praise when I've done all the work. But strangely, they didn't go for that as an idea. They thought it was a question too far.
Well,
but anyway,
nothing is too far on this podcast, as you know. So there we are. If you have thoughts on that, on the whole praise thing, then do send an email to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you. Also, it just remains to say thank you. Thank you to everyone who writes in. You know, these are brilliant emails. I'm sorry if I didn't read yours out. We didn't do, you know, two or three, but thank you for that. That's terrific. Thank you for everyone who gives to the podcast. Can't really thank you enough for that. That's so helpful. We really appreciate it. That's great. If you want to give, you can find a link on our page. And thank you to everyone who recommends us. That's, you know, the only way this thing grows is by word of mouth, because certainly Nick or I aren't going to do any publicity or promotional marketing. No danger of that ever happening. So thank you to everyone who does that.
Yes, we are very grateful. And Joe, I would just like to end with a little bit from the Bible that I've been looking up while you were doing all the thanks. And this is comes back to that early thing about the description of heaven and the gem-like nature of it. Revelation 20:21, starting at verse 19. The foundations of the wall of the city are adorned with every jewel. The first was jasper, the second sapphire, the third agate, the fourth emerald, the fifth onyx, the sixth carnelian, the seventh chrysolite, and the eighth beryl.
Have you invented that?
It's in the Bible, Joe.
Okay.